Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 28, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, my co-host Ron Meniza. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So we are on both Facebook Live and Instagram Live. So wherever you're watching us, if you comment below, I might see it and then I might be able to interact with you. So if you have any questions or comments or whatever you would like, let us know. I'd like you to notice that I'm wearing a shirt that has strawberries on it. Look, see strawberries. I'm very excited about it. It's the first time I've worn the shirt. And it celebrates the season. I do want to remind you, I think I reminded you last week that strawberries, if you're going to eat strawberries, you really want to get the organic ones. That strawberries are excessively sprayed with pesticides. And I didn't realize that it wasn't just one pesticide. It's a lot. And there can be as many as 22 different pesticides on your strawberries. Oof. And the problem with strawberries is that they have very thin skin and whatever you spray on them can get into the strawberries. So it's really a good idea to stick with organic strawberries. I mean, if you get strawberries that happen to not be organic, it's a good idea to wash them. You can get produce sprays that are really good for them. They're really good. It'll get some of the pesticides off. But I think with strawberries, they're like number one on the environmental working group don't do it list. So it's probably a good idea to avoid them. Get organic. And if you have a local grower that doesn't spray their strawberries, that's fantastic. Go for it. And thank them over and over for caring to grow their strawberries in a way that's really safe and healthy for you. All right. So we're continuing with our cardiovascular health series. And today we're going to talk about hypertension, lowering blood pressure. I do talk about this from time to time. And I like to repeat it because it is it's a very important topic. And I have hereditary tendency towards high blood pressure. Both my mother and my sister are on meds right now. And I am not. I'm taking supplements. I'm not sure which supplement did the best for me. I'm going to go through the things that I have taken. But I'll also tell you that I think one of the things that has brought my blood pressure down is meditation and yoga, that I have trained my vagus nerve to be in a calmer state all the time by doing all of the calming yoga that I do. And I'm doing some kind of yoga pretty much every day, almost every day. And even if it's just for 10 or 20 minutes, 10, 15, 20 minutes, that's plenty. And all of that deep breathing is lowering my cortisol. It's making it so that my vagus nerve is in a more active state. So I'm overall calmer and it's had effects on my actual blood vessels, which is very exciting. Let's get into some herbs for high blood pressure. Here's a list of herbs for high blood pressure, and we'll talk about them. There's a bunch of them. First of all, what's high blood pressure? It depends who you ask. It depends on the age, but generally, if your systolic blood pressure, that's the top number of your blood pressure, what it means, it's the force at which your left ventricle, which is the biggest chamber of your heart, pushes blood out to your entire body. So that number is going to be higher than the diastolic pressure. It's a force of pressure that needs to go whoosh and push all that blood, all that oxygenated blood into the rest of your body. So it's got to be high. And it's measured in millimeters of mercury, although generally you don't see when you go to the doctor, they're not using a mercury sphygmomanometer. A sphygmomanometer is the hand manometer, means it's a handheld device that measures. That sphygmomanometer, measures, it's a handheld device that measures blood pressure. And it used to be that the way they would measure the pressure is through mercury. And when I go to my doctor's office, he still has the mercury column on the wall, but they don't use it anymore. When you get your blood pressure taken there, they're using an analog one. So analog means that you're using that cuff that has an air bladder in it, and it's calibrated to be equivalent to millimeters of mercury, but there's no mercury in it. But it used to be that the blood pressure cuff would be linked up to a column that had actual mercury in it, and you would be measuring the pressure in millimeters of mercury. And so when you get it measured now, it's generally measured analog. If you have a blood pressure cuff at home, it's measured by air, and the air is calibrated to be equivalent to millimeters of mercury. So that top number that you're pushing all that blood out to your body, that is the pressure at which your left ventricle pushes blood out to your entire body. The bottom number is your filling pressure. So the aortic valve, which is the valve that opens up at the bottom of that left ventricle where your aorta hooks up, and that's the first vessel that takes the blood to your entire body. So the bottom number is the filling pressure. The aortic valve shuts and your heart fills up. And you don't want that number to be too high either. If that number gets to be too high, it weakens your heart. So the lower your pressure can be, I mean, you don't want it to be too low either, because then you don't have enough pressure to push the blood into your heart. So there's an optimal range. There's a sweet spot, and it's different for everybody. An optimal blood pressure, my optimal blood pressure may not be the same as your optimal blood pressure. But your optimal blood pressure is going to be a pressure that doesn't put too much strain on your heart and your blood vessels, leading to atherosclerosis, leading to hardening of the arteries, and doesn't lead to too much pressure getting into your brain, which can make you more prone to strokes. It's a pressure that works for you to get the blood everywhere you need it to get without being too low, such that you can't get blood into your brain and your vital organs. So there's a sweet spot. My understanding is that it's 120 milligrams systolic over 80 milligrams diastolic, millimeters of mercury. This source that I'm reading here says 130. And for people who are a little bit older, you can get away with 130. I wouldn't give drugs to somebody who had a systolic blood pressure in the 130s. I would certainly talk to them about lifestyle change, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that they go get drugs. If somebody's persistently in the 140s and the above and 90s below, then and nothing you do seems to get it down, they might need a little bit of a med. And I was offered a med, and I wound up not ultimately taking it, and I ultimately worked on lowering my blood pressure in other ways, and I'm very pleased that it worked. I can't guarantee you that what I did is going to work for you, but even if you're on a med, I have people come in all the time who are on a blood pressure med, and the blood pressure is still high. The med is working minimally. I'll measure them, and they're on a couple of meds. Maybe they're on amlodipine and losartan, that have two blood pressure meds that have different mechanisms of action, their blood pressure is still in the 140s over the 90s, so it doesn't always work. And then there are people that every blood pressure med they go on, they feel terrible on, and there are people who every med they go on, they feel terrible on. So. But anyway, that definitely happens. The problem with blood pressure lowering drugs is that blood pressure, like thyroid, like blood sugar, like a lot of other things, is something that happens in your body in response to things that are happening, that are going on in your body. And so if your blood pressure is high for a particular reason, your body has a reason why it's doing that. And if you artificially lower it, you're using a pharmaceutical agent that ignores whatever's going on in the body and creates a situation where there's lower blood pressure. So one of the things that happens is people with blood pressure lowering agents, so say they need to stand up real quick, their blood pressure doesn't respond because they have a drug that's keeping their blood pressure down. So they get lightheaded and dizzy. So lightheadedness and dizziness can be one of the side effects of blood pressure medications. People can also feel tired because, again, if you're moving around, you need a little bit more pressure than if you're sitting still. And if your blood pressure is not able to respond because it's artificially controlled by a med, then you're not going to feel good. And one of the things that people report when they're on blood pressure meds is that they feel tired and they feel tired, sluggish. They can't get out of their own way. Certain blood pressure meds like beta blockers slow your pulse down. They slow your heart rate down and they make it so that even if you are exercising, normally if you exercise, if you're moving around or you get excited, your pulse speeds up. And beta blockers, their job is to slow your pulse down. So if you're trying to exercise, you can't get your heart rate up. And so people have exercise intolerance from these medications. So if there's anything in heck you can do to use lifestyle to get your blood pressure down, it's desirable because then you get to have what blood pressure you need based on your activities. It is normal when you are doing physical activity. Did you know this? That it's normal when you're doing physical activity for your systolic blood pressure to go up. And yeah. High, really high.
Yeah.
Not your diastolic, but your systolic. Right. So the systolic blood pressure is normal for a healthy person to be working at a very hard rate, and their systolic blood pressure can go up as high as 180. That's normal.
Because you're pushing really hard.
Yes.
Right.
But your diastolic blood pressure, the filling pressure, is still supposed to stay about the same, around 80 or less. So if your systolic blood pressure goes up, that's a strain on your heart, and it can cause your heart to hypertrophy. And when it hypertrophies, you get excessive muscle on the heart, and then it can't expand and contract as well. When it can't expand and contract as well, it can affect what's called your ejection fraction. The ejection fraction is the fraction of blood that arrives in your left ventricle that gets ejected into the rest of your body, into the aorta. And it's never 100%, or I don't know if that's true, if it's never 100%, but a normal ejection fraction is considered to be 65 to 75%, which means that 35% of the blood doesn't get ejected into your aorta when your left ventricle contracts. Fun fact, right? So that's interesting. So a 65 to 75% ejection fraction is normal. All right. So that's how it basically works. So let's talk about some herbs that can help you to lower blood pressure. So the first one is, wait for it, you're going to like this. Ready?
Yeah.
Basil.
Basil.
Ooh, basil.
Like basil.
Helps you lower blood pressure.
Yay,
it's
basil.
Great. I know, because you are a fan of the basil.
Well, basil just is right. It has that like really great smell and flavor, and it's just a really yum.
It's a mint.
It's a good thing.
And it's high in eugenol. So everybody, if you've been to Eugene, Oregon, you know how mellow it is out there. So I don't know if that's how eugenol got named. But anyway, eugenol is in basil. It's also, I believe it is in cinnamon as well. But eugenol is a wonderful antioxidant, has a lot of health benefits. It can help lower blood pressure. And one of the ways that it helps lower blood pressure is it has calcium channel blocking effects. So calcium channel blocking, you see, when you have nerves that create what's called an action potential, which is the electrical impulse that causes the nerve to fire. And so there are calcium channeled gates, calcium gated channels and magnesium gated channels. They're calcium gated channels. And when the calcium channels don't open as easily, you don't have as much of a reaction. What happens is the calcium acts as a gate, and then sodium actually goes into the gate. It goes into the gate and then causes the action potential to happen. So you don't want too much sodium getting into the cell, causing too much of an action potential. And so that calcium channel acts as a gate and prevents too much of that from happening. Interestingly, magnesium is an essential mineral that also acts as a natural calcium channel blocker. So magnesium will block those calcium channels and prevent too much sodium from getting in. So that's one of the, there's a number of ways that magnesium works to lower your blood pressure, and that's one of them. So this herb, basil, also has the eugenol that's in basil, will also show up at that gate and stand at the gate and say, sodium, you're not coming in. Sorry. Not coming in. No action potential. Too bad. So you can't have no action potentials. In other words, you need to have some because you have to have some blood pressure. Having extremely low blood pressure, you'll tip over because you need to get blood pressure into your brain. That's really important for you. So if you have adequate calcium channel blockers, but not too much, then you're going to have a more optimal blood pressure. So that's basil. Then there's parsley. It's a popular herb. We were fortunate enough to get a really lovely Middle Eastern spread for dinner on Saturday night. And parsley is a fan favorite. The only thing was because that the place that we got it at sold tabbouleh, we couldn't eat the tabbouleh because tabbouleh is made with bulgur wheat. And so we don't eat wheat. However, the thing about tabbouleh that's delicious is all the flavors in it. So there's a little bit of onion and there's a little bit of lemon and there's olive oil. And the big flavor enhancer in tabbouleh is parsley. You could also throw some mint in there and that would be lovely as well. But parsley and lemon is what gives the tabbouleh its personality. And if you are gluten intolerant and you want to make tabbouleh, you can still do it. Just use quinoa and quinoa works great. We should do that. I'll make you some quinoa tabbouleh.
Okay.
So we'll do that.
I'll wait.
I just need some fresh parsley.
Patiently.
Wait patiently because I have to do it.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
So parsley is great. It has vitamin C in it and has carotenoids. And vitamin C and carotenoids can help to lower blood pressure. Vitamin C causes you to build collagen and it strengthens your blood vessels and makes them more resistant to oxidation, to breaking down. Carotenoids as well. Carotenoids are not, they don't cause you to make collagen, but they certainly work as antioxidants. And carotenoid antioxidants can help to reduce your blood pressure and also your LDL cholesterol. So the LDL cholesterol is the protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to the rest of your body, the thought being that if you have too much LDL, that it's going to deposit cholesterol in arteries, causing repair and ultimately blockage. So there's not a lot of research, but it's still something that has been at times shown. And parsley also has compounds in it that act like calcium channel blockers. So I think one of the ways it works is that there are herbal constituents in these plants that act as calcium channel blockers. And also anything green is going to have magnesium in it. And I already said magnesium acts as a calcium channel blocker. All right. Then there's celery seeds. Remember, apium graveolens. So celery seed, I will eat them sometimes. If you sprinkle celery seed on your salad or on any of your food, it's going to make your food taste a little bit like celery. It's very nice. There's a lot of nutrients in celery seeds. There's magnesium, manganese, calcium, fiber, and there is some research that shows that it can lower blood pressure. And there was a rat study that showed this. And there's, again, guess what? Calcium channel blocker.
Mm.
All these herbs, they act as calcium channel blockers. There's also fiber. Did you know that if you eat enough fiber, it's linked to lower blood pressure? There could be a lot of reasons for that. There could be so many reasons for that. When you eat adequate fiber, you're going to have a better microbiome. That is, you're going to have good bacteria forming in your colon. And those good bacteria are going to help your neurotransmitters to function more readily. And if they're functioning more healthfully, then you're going to generally be calmer. If you're calmer, your blood pressure is going to tend to be lower. The other thing is if you have adequate fiber, you're going to have more comfortable bowel movements and you'll be more frequent and complete and you'll feel better. And because the thing is, if you're not having regular bowel movements, your body detoxifies compounds from the environment and from your metabolism that it wants to excrete. It puts them into bile and then the bile winds up in your stool. That's supposed to leave your body. If you're not excreting your stool as regularly as you should, then you're going to wind up reabsorbing some of those toxins and those toxins can be inflammatory. and they can be inflammatory, and they can be nerve irritants or toxins. So those can raise your blood pressure. So going to the bathroom regularly is very important. So eat your fiber, and especially eating fiber this time of year. There's so much wonderful produce right now. Many berries and fruits and vegetables and cherries, they're all available. I bought my first bag of cherries this week. I can't wait to get into some. And I also like strawberries. See, you can tell I like strawberries because I'm wearing the strawberries. I like strawberries.
Yeah, I know you do.
Okay. Yeah, the strawberries are fun.
They're good.
I like strawberries, and I like strawberry flavored things.
Yummy.
Strawberry jam is good.
Mm.
Strawberries with chocolate on them is good.
Strawberry shortcake is good.
Strawberry shortcake is good.
I had some last week.
You did?
I did.
Where'd you have that?
I had it at the Taste of Mansfield meeting as our dessert.
So
afterwards.
Who made gluten-free strawberry shortcake?
One of the members of the group made a gluten-free shortcake, and it came out really good. It was very good.
You can go to, they probably have it at Dee's this time of
year.
They
probably
Dee's
do,
makes
but
strawberry
shortcake. This woman actually made it herself.
Oh, that's awesome.
She makes her own shortbread all the time, and she decided to try a gluten-free recipe, and it was, it's actually perfect for strawberry shortcake, because strawberry shortcake, you dump a bunch of strawberries on the top, and then you put either whipped cream or ice cream on top of that. Yeah. So the bread is going to get all, it's going to absorb up all the liquids anyway. So you can't even tell that it's gluten-free because, gluten-free tends to be a little crumbly.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because it was all being sucked up by all the wonderful stuff.
So there's,
it was really good, Fran. It was really good.
Okay, anyway, so that's great.
Just so you know.
So then there's an herb, cat's claw. We think of cat's claw, Chinese cat's claw, as being something you use to fight Lyme disease. And you definitely use that. And keratomatosa can definitely go after tick-borne illnesses, especially Lyme disease. But there's another Uncaria rhinchfilla, and also known as gutang or chotoku. And so it's not the same as Uncaria tomentosa, it's Uncaria rhinchfilla. And it has a different origin and different chemical properties. And it has herbs in it, it has compounds in it called hirsutine and rhinchofilline. And there again, animal studies show they may reduce blood pressure by what mechanism?
Don't know.
Same one as all day. Same thing I've been saying. All the other things do it. Calcium channel blocker.
Channel blocker.
Yeah. Okay. So the rhinchofilline and the hirsutine. I don't know why it's called hirsutine. Hirsutine would implicate that it can cause you to grow extra hair. It may make you hirsute, which means that you are extra hairy. I don't know why it's called that. But anyway, those compounds are thought to act as calcium channel blockers. Also, a new mechanism of action, woohoo, that those compounds can help you make nitric oxide. And nitric oxide helps to relax and dilate blood vessels. So again, if you're eating a lot of produce, you're going to get your nitric oxide. But these compounds that are in this Chinese cat's claw can help to do that as well. So can help with blood flow. Studies are limited, but that it's something that you could try. Then there's Bacopa monnieri. So Bacopa monnieri is an herb that I know to help with cognition. It's something that I'll give my patients when they're complaining, I can't remember stuff, I'm having some cognitive issues, I can't focus. That's one of the herbs that you give people. And Bacopa is in the Ayurvedic family. It's very pretty. It looks like a little, like a form of a daisy, kind of, sort of. So I don't know if it's in the... if Bacopa happens to be in the daisy family, can you look up for me what plant family is Bacopa in? And so Bacopa can help lower B-A-C-O-P-A. Yeah. And we just want to know what family it's in. So it might be if it says that it's a, it says it's also known as water hyssop. So find what family it's in and tell me. And that it can lower both systolic and diastolic blood pressure. And it's a nitric oxide enhancer. That's mostly how it works. And there are some studies that show that it works and some that don't. But again, there are definitely studies that show that it helps with cognition and focus. So you definitely can try it for that. And it's pretty easy to find these days. I have an easy time finding it. And then there's our stanky friend, garlic. Garlic has a lot of compounds that can benefit your heart. Garlic contains sulfur compounds that are called isothiocyanates. The thio in isothiocyanate means that it has sulfur in it. So that those are the isothiocyanates are the compounds, the multiple bizarre, interesting compounds that are in all of the alliums. So allium, anything that starts with allium is in the lily family. So and you can tell that it's in the lily family because plants in that family tend to have a bulb like a lily. And so all of the things that taste like onions and garlic, the genus is allium. So that's going to be, I can't rattle them all off, but Allium sepa is onion, and Allium sativa is, that just means that it's a cultivated allium, but that Allium sativa is the name for garlic. And then there's alliums, there's chives, and there's shallots, and there's leeks, and there's wild onions, and they all start with allium, and then they have a different name. And so let's see, so have we found the plant? Okay.
Plantae?
No, that's the kingdom.
Okay.
So tribe. Family. Oh, it's Plantaginaceae. It is not a daisy. So it's not a
large diverse family of flowering plants.
Yeah, it's a Plantaginaceae. Yeah. I thought maybe it was because it looks a little bit like a daisy. It's not a daisy. Daisies are used to be the Compositae, now is the Asteraceae. And I like that it's called Asteraceae. Asteraceae means it looks like a star. That's that. An aster is a star. Like an asteroid is a star-like thing in the sky. An aster is a star. And, of course, an aster is a flower. That looks like a star. And daisies are in the Asteraceae family. And our lawn is covered in great big daisies right now. They're very pretty. And we got a couple and put them in a vase, and I'll probably go get some more. So garlic is really great for helping to lower blood pressure because of those isothiocyanates. They increase blood flow and help relax your vessels. Don't know if it's because of nitric oxide, but one of the compounds is that works to help to do that is allicin. And it's not spelled like allicin. It's spelled like allium, A-L-L-I-C-I-N. And when you get a high potency garlic supplement, it's going to have a lot of allicin in it. And okay. Allicin does all kinds of neat things for you. It's antimicrobial, helps to lower blood pressure, it thins your blood, and so it makes it less likely for you to have blood clots. And there's actually a 24-week study where they found that at certain doses, garlic extract was just as effective at lowering blood pressure as atenolol, which is a beta blocker. Pretty impressive. All right, and then there's thyme. Time.
See what's become of me.
Time waits for no one. So thyme is a flavorful herb, and it has rosmarinic acid in it. And rosmarinic acid is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. So rosmarinic acid is also going to be in rosemary. So thyme and rosemary are going to have similar properties, likely. So rosmarinic acid can help reduce your systolic blood pressure, and it works in a different mechanism, which is to be an angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitor. So thyme is something you can throw into your salads and your soups, and you can sprinkle it over your fish or your protein, whatever you would like. It can go into a smoothie. It's very easy to use. It's a wonderful antimicrobial. Thyme has also been shown to reduce heart disease risk. It can help to lower your LDL triglycerides and your blood pressure. And so it's a lovely, flavorful herb, and it can do all these nice things. So angiotensin converting enzyme, you see, you have the system in your kidneys that regulates blood pressure. It's the renin-angiotensin cycle. So renin gets converted to angiotensin 1, and angiotensin 1 gets converted to angiotensin 2. Those two conversions are done by angiotensin converting enzyme. So angiotensin 2 gets converted to aldosterone, and aldosterone in your kidneys holds on to sodium, which holds on to water. So if you break that cycle in a number of ways, you can lower blood pressure because you're not going to hold on to as much sodium, so you're going to let go of more water. And there's different ways that that is done by way of blood pressure medications. So there's the ACE inhibitors, which directly inhibits the that angiotensin converting enzyme. And then there's the ARBs, the angiotensin receptor antagonists. So what's going to happen there is that the place where the enzyme bonds, it's not going to be able to bond. So it's a little bit different mechanism than the directly blocking the enzyme. So you can either block the enzyme or you can block the receptors on the cells that contain the enzyme so that the enzyme can't bond. And then you break that cycle, that renin-angiotensin cycle. You don't hold on to your sodium, so you let go of more water, and now you have lower blood pressure. Then you have loop diuretics like your furosemide and your hydrochlorothiazide, and they prevent the loops from hanging on to water, and you lose a lot of water, and you lose a lot of minerals with that too, which can be problematic. So those are a few of the ways that the different drugs work. And I told you about how the calcium channels blockers work as well. So that's thyme. Then there's cinnamon. Cinnamon, of course, comes from the inner bark of trees from the Cinnamomum genus. And it's been used to treat heart conditions. It's also used to treat blood sugar. It's not entirely understood how it works, but it's supposed to dilate and relax your blood vessels. So it may not be through nitric oxide, but it does tend to relax blood vessels. And they're modest reductions, but it's helpful. But if you did a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of parsley, a little bit of thyme, a little bit of rosemary, before you know it, you have normal blood pressure, we hope. Okay. And so they found that you have to do a lot of cinnamon, like 500 to 2400 milligrams a day, and you'll get somewhat of a decrease in blood pressure. And if it's 2 to 5 millimeters of mercury decrease, if you're borderline, that can take you into the normal zone. If you're not borderline, it could take you from the 150s into the 140s and the 90s into the 80s, which is a good thing. So if you're at, 150 over 90 and you go down to 145 over 85, that's good. That's worth eating all these nice things that taste good and are going to help you with your health. Then there's ginger. Ginger is one of my favorite things. Cinnamon is also one of my favorite things. I love cinnamon. I love ginger. Ginger is versatile. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It probably has a lot of different mechanisms of action, and they'll probably mention a couple in this list I'm looking at. But it can reduce blood pressure. It has both calcium channel blocking and ACE inhibiting properties. And so, again, there's going to be compounds in ginger that help to block those gates and to block those enzymes. Really interesting. And those that consume the most ginger had the lowest risk of developing high blood pressure in a study. And it's really easy to incorporate in your diet. I always keep candied ginger in my desk. You can get actual candied organic ginger. That's something that you can buy at various stores, or our Willimantic Food Co-op has it. You can also get little ginger chews. And there are companies, I think the companies are in Indonesia. I'm not sure. This would be something fun to look up. What? Look up what country are gingins made in.
Gingins.
They're these little ginger chews. Because what happens is there's a few companies that make these little ginger chews. So they're not just ginger. They have extra sugar in them and they have some agents to gel them up. Whereas when you get candy ginger, it's just ginger that's been boiled and infused with sugar, and that the only ingredients are ginger and sugar. So it has less ingredients in it, and they're a little bit easier to chew, and they're very fibrous because it's real ginger that just has sugar in it. Whereas if you get the gingins, it has more ingredients in it, and they're not quite as messy, and they're very nice. But ginger is, these companies are often made, I think there's a factory, I think it's in Indonesia, it's somewhere in Southeast Asia, it's all made there, because I've bought a couple of different brands of these things and looked at the companies that make them, and I think it's like maybe one company that's making it, but a number of companies buy them and put their label on them. And I found these ginger chews at TJ Maxx. And also your health food stores are going to carry them too. What's nice about them is they come in little individually wrapped pieces, so you can carry them with you. Ginger, of course, is something that's great for your tummy, and it works. It does a bunch of things for your digestive system. One of the things that it does, it's a carminative, so it helps to move things along in your digestive system, so you release excess gas. And it is also thought of as a motility enhancer. So if you are diagnosed with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, ginger is one of the herbs that gets used because it helps to move things along through your digestive system. So it's really nice that way. And ginger helps to reduce nausea, probably because it reduces inflammation. So it's a wonderful digestive anti-inflammatory. It's an anti-inflammatory for your whole body as well. If you eat ginger, you can reduce inflammation in your digestive system, in your respiratory system, and in your musculoskeletal system. It's great. Ginger is a great herb to use for decreasing joint pain and body aches. Okay, so there's this ginger, people.
Yeah, and they support farmers in regions all over the world, including China, Fiji, Indonesia, and Peru.
Okay, so there's ginger growers in a bunch of places. So yeah. It is quite possible that the brands that I came across were packaged in Indonesia, but that's not the only place.
Or they could be here, where, you know, about
Yes. us. Yes. Well, but the packages that I saw, they definitely, I wasn't sure if it was Malaysia or Indonesia, but it was Indonesia. But that's not the only place they grow ginger. I would assume they grow ginger in Jamaica, you know, because ginger is a, look at that. You can get ginger people ginger juice. I want some of that. That's going to be good.
Ginger people.
Yes, they've juiced the ginger, and then there's
there
the gingins.
Are the ginger people.
Yes, and the gingins are fun because you can get them in ginger flavor, and they come in mango flavor and other flavors, so I'll piggyback down the ginger.
The ginger people are in Marina, California.
Yeah, well, right, that's where the company is, but that's probably not where they grow the ginger.
No.
I don't think you can grow the ginger in California. You have to grow it in special climate.
Yeah, it doesn't grow well around here. I asked somebody about that locally, a local farmer about it. But then again, I did a farm to fork fondo. We did a private tour up in Massachusetts a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And the farm that we were at was actually a restaurant had bought the farm to sustain the farm so they could grow all their own food to serve in four different restaurants. Mm-hmm. And they were growing ginger there. And I brought some home. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Where were they?
It was good.
It's really good. So where were they growing it outside?
Yeah.
They must have had a short season. Because I
think
ginger...
They had it under a hoop also.
Okay.
So they did have it in a long tunnel.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Because I think to grow ginger, you probably have a certain kind... You need a certain kind of soil... And you need to be tropical or subtropical.
Right.
That's where ginger
tends
to grow.
It had to be fairly warm.
Right. Yeah. So the hoop, they managed
but they
to
were,
do that with
ginger
the hoop.
That ginger was really good. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
It was
excellent. I kind of remember it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, it was up in Massachusetts where you did. Was that
it
the...
It was north of Boston, kind of Massachusetts.
Right.
Near the New Hampshire line.
Oh, so this was not the Hancock farm?
No.
A different farm.
No, this was a private tour that we did.
Okay.
For a company, and
yes.
we do that also. We do private tours.
Oh, okay.
Private
That's
bicycle
nice.
Tours.
Okay.
So, and
That's
we
good.
Brought all these people out for a bike ride, which was cool.
That's nice.
Yep.
Let's talk about another favorite, cardamom.
Cardamom.
Yeah. Cardamom is super delicious, slightly sweet. It's kind of intense. It's part of what gives your chai its personality, has a lot of antioxidants and helps to lower blood pressure. And there was a nice study with people who had 3 grams of cardamom powder. That's a lot of cardamom. Would significantly reduce blood pressure. That's a lot of cardamom powder, and that's going to be expensive. But if you wanted to do it, you could. So if you did a gram of cardamom powder 3 times a day, it took the people into the normal range. The thing is, it's kind of inconvenient, so people tend not to do it. It's a lot of cardamom. It's got calcium channel blocking activities, and it's also a diuretic. So there you go. Cardamom is delicious in coffee. If you do cardamom and cinnamon in your coffee, that's part of what gives Turkish coffee its personality. I really like to put cinnamon in coffee. And I keep forgetting. We went to the coffee place yesterday, and I got a cold brew because I love – that's my favorite thing, one of my favorite things in the summer. I've discovered that I enjoy a cold brew either naked or with a little bit of unsweetened oat milk, and that's my new thing. And I always forget that I love cinnamon in coffee. And if you put, and I'll tell you this again, you put cinnamon in coffee, real cinnamon in coffee, you may need less sugar or maybe no sugar at all, because cinnamon tastes sweet. And the wonderful thing about cinnamon is it helps to lower your blood pressure. So if the coffee kind of raises your blood pressure a bit, the cinnamon will help to bring it back down. And cinnamon helps to regulate blood sugar. It's magical because it tastes sweet and it's a blood sugar regulator. So really good for you. And it makes things taste delicious. I want to say good morning to two of my friends who are listening. One of them's Hillary. Yo, Hillary. And also Holly. Good morning, Holly. They're both listening on IG Live. So this is kind of fun using the IG Live. I think I'm going to keep doing it. So we're on Facebook Live and we're on IG Live. It's kind of cool, right? So anyway. Okay, so easy to incorporate into your cooking or baking. And my friend Tina gave me cardamom essential oil, so it makes it easy to drop it, like just a drop, into my coffee. So it's very nice. So blood pressure is really common in the United States, and it's a preventable risk factor for heart disease. So before I go any further, let's talk about what I did, what I continue to do to help my blood pressure. I really think that the number one thing that I do is yin yoga. And that's most days of the week for anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes, I do a yin yoga practice. And yin yoga is where you are doing yoga where you're holding the poses for anywhere from 90 seconds to as much as 5 minutes and maybe even 8 minutes. 8 minutes, when you're getting into the 5 to 8 minute range, it's really restorative yoga. And I do that too. So yin yoga and restorative yoga are things that I do almost every day. Some days I miss. Like if I do a very active yoga practice that has a nice relaxation in Shavasana at the end, I might not do the yin practice. But I try to get some yoga in every single day, even if it's just for 10 to 20 minutes. And what you do in those restorative and yin yoga practices is deep breathing. And deep breathing is the number one way you can lower cortisol. Cortisol, remember what cortisol does. Cortisol runs around your body looking for stuff to break down, put sugar into your blood so you have energy to run away from the bear. Mm. And so, that's what cortisol does. Right. And so if you lower cortisol, you're going to have less sugar around, and sugar has to be metabolized. And when sugar gets metabolized, it brings insulin in, and insulin will cause you to release inflammatory compounds. You have more inflammatory compounds, you have more irritation to the inside of your blood vessels. So it's a really good goal to lower your cortisol, to have your relative cortisol level be lower. So you do, and one of the ways you do that is to train your vagus nerve to be more active. How do you train your vagus nerve to be more active? To do a lot of deep breathing. How you get to the deep breathing is up to you. I like to do yin and restorative yoga. You don't have to do that. You can sit in a chair and breathe deeply. You can go sit in your yard and listen to the birds and breathe deeply. You can get an app like Calm or Headspace or many other apps. And they have lots of fun exercises for you to do. And by exercises, I just mean tasks, that not necessarily, jumping up and down exercises, but generally not, because we're trying to calm you down, right? But things you can do, guided meditations where you sit or lie in a really comfortable position and you just listen to what they're telling you and you get to relax. And then there's your box breathing, for example. So box breathing is where you inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, once again, hold for 4 seconds, and repeat. And I found this little app that's really cute. It has a smiley face that's in a box, and there's a line that goes around, and you follow the line, and it'll say to you, breathe in till the line turns a corner, hold till the line turns a corner, breathe out till the line turns a corner, and breathe and hold again, and so you go in a box. The other thing that you can do instead of box breathing is more rectangular breathing. I'm calling it that. I don't think anybody calls it that. But what you do is you breathe in for four and then you exhale for longer than four. So your exhalation is longer than your inhalation. So it could be any amount longer that you can do. When I do my friend Angie's yoga class, she'll have us breathe in for four and exhale for eight, exhale for 12, exhale for 16. And that's not easy to do, but I mean, it's sufficient to breathe in for four and exhale for six, or breathe in for four and exhale for eight. And if you can practice that, the long exhalation helps you to lower cortisol. And if you are in a practice of doing this every day, not only will you lower your cortisol while you are doing it, but your vagus nerve will be more active and it will be more on board regularly, and you will be in a calmer state most of the time. And I think that's part of what happened for me. So as I said, you can do yin yoga, you can do restorative yoga, you can do tai chi, you can do qigong, which is one of my favorites. Qigong is very slow and meditative. It's a standing practice. So if you want to stand up and do some movement, qigong is really great for that. I'm a huge fan of yoga nidra. Yoga nidra is very simply a progressive relaxation. And it doesn't even have to be called yoga nidra. It could just be called progressive relaxation. But yoga nidra is, once again, you get in a very, very comfortable position. And the guide, and you just close your eyes. And if you have a yoga, you can find yoga nidra practices. You can definitely go to them. That sometimes yoga studios will hold yoga nidra sessions. And if you're not finding one that works for you in time, there's definitely YouTubes where you can pick up yoga nidra, and you just turn it on and close your eyes and listen to it, get in a super comfortable position and do what she says. And any of these practices can be done for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour and a half. You pick the amount of time that you want to do it in. And the other thing about doing it in a tape is you can do it any time, day or night. And if it's too long for you, you could turn it off. But 10 minutes is plenty, and it will help you to relax. And you can, and that's the thing, if you have a device in your office or anywhere that you are, you can flip on your device at any time, and then you can go ahead and do your practice. And those are things that really help. I think that those things really helped me a lot. I still consume some caffeine. I can't consume an excessive amount of caffeine. So even while I'm consuming caffeine, I'm doing these practices, and my blood pressure, every time I go to the doctor and the dentist, my blood pressure has been normal consistently over the last 6 months or longer. It's very exciting. Mind you, there are other things that I take. I mean, I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I definitely do that. A lot of fiber. I eat nuts and seeds. I eat chia seeds, and I eat hemp seeds, and I eat flax seeds. I take a probiotic, and I eat yogurt. And most of the time, the yogurt that I eat is non-dairy, because I don't do so great with dairy. I'm not convinced that I'm completely need to be off dairy, but I mostly stay away from it. When I'm doing yogurt in a day-to-day way, it's generally non-dairy. And my favorites are coconut. Generally, I do coconut yogurt. I have had some pea protein-based yogurts that are okay, but my favorite non-dairy yogurt is definitely coconut-based. So I'm doing that. I'm also taking magnesium. I go back and forth between magnesium orotate, that salt of magnesium has been studied to be really good for blood pressure. I also take magnesium glycinate malate, so I'll alternate between those two. And the glycine that's in magnesium glycinate is a really relaxing neurotransmitter. I used to take glycine on its own, but it made me too groggy. It worked too well. It made me sleepy and groggy, and it gave me weird dreams, so I had to stop taking it. For a long time, I was taking taurine, which is a wonderful calming amino acid. Glycine is not a neurotransmitter, it's amino acid. Taurine, and I took taurine for a long time. The thing with taurine is a membrane stabilizer. It's going to have some calcium channel calming effects as well. Taurine enhances your GABA activity. That's gamma aminobutyric acid. And that's a calming neurotransmitter that we make in our brains. And I took taurine and I had to get off it because I got too calm. It took a long time to get to that point, but I've been gradually pulling out calming things that I take because I was getting really groggy. And then I was taking theanine for a long time. And L-theanine is a wonderful amino acid that's in tea. And it's in green, black, and white tea. And I was taking that again. Theanine also enhances GABA activity. I had to come off it because I got to be too calm. But I'm taking an Ayurvedic combination called Cardatone. And in this Ayurvedic combination, there's a lot of herbs in it. One of the herbs is Arjona, and Arjona has been studied to help to lower blood pressure. And there's magnesium in that product as well. There's also Rauwolfia in it, which concerns me. Rauwolfia is a very old, long-used central nervous system depressant. So I'm not entirely sure that I want to take that forever, but I started to take it and it didn't affect me too badly. So I'm continuing to take it and I'm pulling out some of the other calming things that I was taking. I also take hawthorn. I take a little bit of hawthorn solid extract every day. I have a great big bottle of it. It lasts me months and I only take a quarter teaspoon of it a day because it's very potent. And hawthorn is a wonderful herb for strengthening blood vessels and strengthening your heart. So that's another one of the things that I take. Just thinking, is there anything else I take? And I take a potassium pill. And the potassium pill might be overkill because I eat so much produce. But I'm taking the potassium because it has citrate in it to prevent me from getting kidney stones. So there's a bunch of things that I'm taking. I also take natokinase. And natokinase can be helpful too because it's anti-inflammatory. Taking the natokinase because I had an elevated D-dimer. Which happened as a result of getting a vaccination. And so I'm taking the natokinase is probably also helping too. I had to back off on some things because everything was working too well, but now I'm in sort of a sweet spot. I'm able to exercise. I rode my bike 3 days in a row. Now I didn't go for super long rides these 3 days, but we kicked it up a little bit yesterday, wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
we did. Today I did a time trial. I'm going to get off the bike tomorrow. I'm going to ride with friends on Wednesday. That'll be nice. So I've been riding my bike, and that's good. I did have a little setback a couple weeks ago where I had to get off the bike and rest. But so I get regular exercise. I also do yoga most days. Really, I have to say, I have to wonder if that's one of the best things I'm doing. Do you think that's one of the best things I'm doing for my health, all that yoga?
Yes.
What happened to Fran since she's been doing lots of yoga?
She's calmer.
I am?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do I do less of that since I've been doing yoga? What's different? Can you be a little more specific?
I don't know if I can be any more specific than you're calmer. Because, you know.
You're such a Taurus.
That's what I see.
So Ron thinks that I'm calmer since I've been doing the yoga, which is probably true.
Yeah.
I probably don't freak out as much. I do still worry about stuff.
You worry about a lot of things. I worry about a lot of things. more than most people I've known.
Well, I don't know if that's true.
It's way up there.
Well, it's because the people you know aren't talking to you about what they're worrying about.
Okay.
In my world, people are very anxious. They come in to see me and they're all anxious and they're all stressed. So I think it's that for whatever reason, you're not hearing about it. It's not that people are not anxious. Can anybody confirm this for me? If you're listening and you want to drop something in the comments, tell me if you have experienced anxiety lately or if you know people who are experiencing anxiety. I'm very curious because I know that I do. Okay. And my friend just wrote that she invented worry. So you get a gold star. Shout out to my friend. I don't want to say your name if you don't want me to. Tell me if I can. Okay. And, you know, I have a friend who's listening right now who I went to high school with.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I went to high school with this woman. I went to school with this woman since. So, Stephanie, do you remember? So you need calm other than the combat. Stephanie, do you remember what grade we started school together at? So she's listening on IG Live. So let's see if she tells us. I think we were together in third grade. But she's listening right now. Can't believe it. Shout out to Stephanie. Nice. I'm so excited.
Modern technology.
Yeah. So she's psyched. Yes. So it's really great. Anyway, so big shout out to two of my friends who are listening, Holly and Stephanie. Okay. So let me see. So I just have a few minutes left. And so this is great because we've got to talk a bit about blood pressure. Let me just tell you a little bit more about hawthorn. Hawthorn is a wonderful herb. I grew up on Hawthorn Lane in East Windsor, New Jersey. I think I'm not going to talk about hawthorn for very long, but hawthorn is a wonderful plant. We'll get into talking more about hawthorn next week, but it's got these great berries in it. Hawthorn berries, you wouldn't pick hawthorn berries off a tree and just eat them because they're kind of astringent tasting, but okay. They do make a tasty jam, and you can make a solid extract out of them. And when you make tea out of them, like I said, they're kind of astringent, but they're this deep red color, and they have a lot of bioflavonoids in them, so they're very strengthening to your blood vessels. So I think we're going to wrap it up, and we'll talk more about hawthorn and a few more herbs. And a little bit more about blood pressure and cholesterol next week, next time we're back. All right, so I'm going to wrap it up. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.